Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Hey, I'm Rach.
And I'm Dean. And we're from Joy Breakfast.
We hope you enjoy this Joy podcast.
You're on Joy Brekkie with Rach and Dean. It's 13 minutes past 8. And each and every month, we're joined by our resident psychotherapist, Anjo, to clarify some things in life that we all may struggle with at times. And today, look, it's a big one that Rach and I are pretty pumped to be talking about. When we think about the word endings, we might instantly be drawn to tragic losses or long-lost loved ones.
But endings come in many different shapes and forms. It might be the way you sneak out of parties, not wanting to do the goodbyes, or perhaps an unconscious pattern that sees you somehow getting your partner to leave you. And this morning, we're delving into the topic of endings with Ando. Good morning, Ando.
Folks, I'm laughing at the soundtrack that you've got in the background.
Look,
I'm sorry.
Well, when I think about endings, I've got to admit, they kind of never do end and just go around and around in circles for us both. So it is that never-ending story when I'm thinking about it. But let's dive into it. So the concept of endings, is that the same thing as the concept of closure?
Oh, that's a good question. Yes and no. We are naturally, as human beings, wired to have this need for closure. In other words, the unresolved makes us quite anxious. And so sometimes I think we close or make a decision on things prematurely. Premature closure, we call it. And that is kind of the concept of, well, I don't have all the information, but I'm just going to make a decision. And I think, yeah, closure does play a role in endings because sometimes we do it too quickly, I think.
Well, I get sometimes we're not ready for endings. And I would even go as far as saying when often not ready for endings.
Are you ever ready for an ending? I don't reckon.
How do people accept the finality of something being an end?
I think, Rach, the point is who's driving, who's in control. If I'm in control and I make the decision to end, then it still can hurt, but it's known and I went into it doing what I was doing versus somebody else doing the ending for me. And I think that's when we get that sort of the shock and the grief.
Do you think maybe that's why sometimes people try to get in first? Like, oh, I'm gonna make this ending happen. And we're talking about a specific type of ending right now. Like when a person goes, this is done. I'm drawing the line for myself. Whatever reason they may be doing it. A part of it is getting first is the wrong kind of term I want to use, but they're protecting themselves by just shutting that door.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's sometimes becomes another element of, or another dynamic at play of competition, which is, no, I want to end first. No, I want to end first. And what does it matter? Like if you're actually both wanting to end, then end and try and do it respectfully. But yeah, when it's, I think sometimes we, to protect ourselves, have this sort of subconscious pattern of I'm getting a sense that this is not going well. And so we either sabotage, in other words, blow this thing up, or we exit stage left. And I think, yeah, it's protecting ourselves.
It's so interesting that we've come into this conversation with completely different ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Because me, endings is end of life, end of an era, a something, not a relationship. I feel like relationships come and go and can end. Whereas when I think of ends, I think of really like final things that are
like
irreversible.
Death.
Yeah. And something that is so life altering, it's then becomes hard to grasp the thought of moving forward without that thing in your life anymore. Mm-hmm. But is every day beyond the end of something technically a new beginning?
Yeah. Well, a couple of points there, Rach. The first point is, you know, one of the things I do in my clinic with folks around grief and endings is we can reminisce about parts and we can be angry about parts. So if it's about a person that we love and have lost, we can reminisce and still have an ongoing relationship with them even though they're gone. In other words, hey, Dad, I'm hearing this song and I'm thinking of you and I love you, and miss you. And so I talk out loud to my dead dad. And also, like in relationships, it's like there's parts of her that were that I really miss and she was gorgeous, and there's other parts of her that I never want back in my life again. So kind of a splitting can occur, which actually can help us sort of understand that it's we don't have to hate all of them or love all of them, but we can have bits. The second point of new beginnings, that endings does, like the ambiguity of endings of that sort of loss and then that potential of what's next and that chasm that we sit in that moment of between loss and what's next can be really scary but also really exciting.
When we think about endings, like we are all approaching it from different ways, just even this conversation, but the way in which Rach is talking about when we're talking about death is there's a level of finality to it because you have a kind of line that you know is not going to be able to cross, as opposed to ones with a relationship where you may have another point in mind where you see a person or don't. When you're looking at endings as a psychotherapist and you're approaching that with the care that you need for people to be able to help in, what is it that you look at?
I'm conscious that in good therapy, which I'd hope that it happens most of the time or all of the time, the construct of the relationship or therapeutic alliance between therapist and client is the potential to replicate those social connections or relationships outside of the therapy room. In other words, this is a concentrated container for us to do or try things differently. So I'm conscious, like, I don't say to a client 10 minutes in their last session, oh, we've got 10 minutes and this is our last session. We start talking about endings probably 3 appointments before their final appointment, so that if they've got perhaps less healthy or unhelpful patterns of endings, we can use therapy as an opportunity to try and do a different ending. In other words, you know, last session often I will say, do you want to have a look at intake, at your intake notes, and do you want to go back 12 months ago and say, why did you turn up for therapy? Is it the same? Has it helped? And so often reflect on growth to make it a positive experience versus see ya, bye, and slam the door outside or after they leave.
Do you think that there's a way that you can train your brain to cope with endings better?
I think the first point is awareness. So in other words, like my history, at the risk of oversharing, is if I go to a party, I never say goodbye. I sneak out the door and I'm gone. And I will thank people in the days or weeks that follow. Hey, that was really lovely. But I just don't want to do endings at social events. And so I have a real awareness of it. And it sort of gives me a self foot up the butt to go, hey, Ando, you better think post, you better kiss and hug everyone goodbye. And yeah, it's going to take 10 minutes and people are going to say, stay longer, but do it. And so, yeah, self-awareness and understanding or noticing, is there a pattern between how you do it? It might be the social events connected to death, connected to relationships. You know, do you have a thing around endings?
Yeah. Well, sorry, did you want, I'm jumping in. There's these options about like drawing out endings, right? So for example, with a breakup or with someone who might be dying of an illness or age-related things, you have that opportunity to then in those final days try and make peace of decisions that are happening, of how this ending may occur versus, you know, the sudden endings and stuff. If you're in the position where you do have space, maybe with a relationship, maybe with a loved one who is unwell, is there a way to make endings easier?
Easier. It's such a tough word, isn't it? I guess, and I want to say this sort of with a bucket load of empathy and respect, rituals and ceremonies can be really helpful for folks. And I don't mean a religious funeral. If that's your thing, that's your thing. What I mean is, you know, is there something, if somebody's, you know, towards end of life, and is it about reminiscing together? Is it about having, you know, asking them what can I do? Because we're really clumsy around grief and death. And so saying, what would make you most comfortable? If we've only got a week or two left on this planet, what do you want to do with me? You know, and it might be just lay and I want to watch a Judy Garland movie, or, you know, like having something that you can take into the future after they're gone to be able to go, you know what, that was really special. That was what they wanted.
Yeah.
I think that actually is quite cathartic.
I am the complete opposite in regard to sons of what we talked about. Ironic. Why is it always that the case with me? I'm that person, unlike you, Ando, that goes around at the party and I want to say goodbye to everyone. I've had conversations with friends who have been ill where we're like, we may be catching up in the next month, we may not, and we don't know where the situation is. And being able to have space for that conversation makes sense to me. I'll even, if things aren't going well with friends or in a relationship, go, it's okay if we're rounding out towards this point. I create that space for it. And constantly never have the respect for the fact of how, like you said, it's awkward for the other person. It may not be the center or space that they need. What's a good balance for that, do you reckon?
Another hard question, Dean. look, I lean into the other person. This isn't like it is about me because I'm feeling the pain or the you know, this is the other thing with endings. We have actual endings and perceived endings.
Yeah,
in other words, you know, or prolonged endings. My mother's been in aged care, palliative care for 7 years. This strong, powerful, beautiful woman that I admire and still do is not the same human being. And so every time I leave the nursing home, I burst into tears and I grieve. Mm. And she's still alive, though, technically, but a big part of her's gone. And so that sort of that element plays out, as well as to your point, Dean, I think, again, lean into the other person. Like with my mum, she has dementia. She doesn't know what she wants.
Yeah.
I buy a fillet of fish. She likes a fillet of fish. She smears it all over her face. I sit there trying not to cry. And she seems happy because the nursing home says she doesn't eat at the moment. And it's like, well, she just bloody ate a whole happy meal.
Yeah.
And so, sure, she's not answering me, but I'm getting signals that this is what she wants. And so maybe that's my ego or my stuff, but... yeah, I'd lean into the other person.
I think you've hit the nail right on the head there with a word, and it's not a bad word to use, but with my ego. So creating that space for the understanding of what someone else is experiencing or going through actually creates this really beautiful connectiveness in regard to endings. I'm going to tell you a very funny story that kind of connects to what you just said just before we let you go. When my nonna, who also had dementia, was in a nursing home, we just hit a point where we had to stop telling her that I was gay because she kept obviously forgetting. And the pictures on her wall were all pictures of me singing at weddings with different women. So she assumed I was married to different people. And we just hit a point where we were like, we can't keep reminding her that I'm gay. So we created a story about it. And that became the narrative of me for her, which was kind of cute. And you're right. As long as you're creating the space that exists for joyous time together, whatever that ending may be, that's
whatever
okay.
It means. Yeah. Were you offended by not being out?
No, exactly. Because it was something that we were all able to share in. And it wasn't about being harmful or anything. It was about just creating the space for the important things, which is the people and the relationships, not the conversation.
True. Look, I don't want this conversation to end because I feel like there's a million more questions where we can ask about like work-related endings and other areas of our life in which we have endings, but we don't have time. So I think we put a bookmark in and we talk about this again sometime because endings, the conversation on endings doesn't need to end.
That's exactly right.
Can I have that soundtrack again, please?
Oh, no, it's there. Oh. Endings don't need to end, and we are going to keep talking about endings more throughout the show. Well, when we get you back on, we absolutely need to. Thanks for joining us this morning, Ando. If any part of this conversation brings up things for you, you can find out more at joy.org.au/support to be able to get support or reach out to Ando at Jefferson Place.
Thank you for enlightening us, Ando.
Thanks, folks.
It is 27 minutes past 8. Joy.
It's 10 minutes to 9. You're on Joy Brekkie with Rach and Dean.
Now, earlier when we had Cal in the studio, we got onto the topic of Good Karma Network as a place that you might be able to find someone to help clean your house. And we got a very informative message in.
Now, this one's from Shelley in Camberwell, and Kel didn't know what a Good Karma Network was. Shelley says, I'm an admin for two of the original and affiliated Good Karma Networks. Not all Facebook groups that use Good Karma Network in their name use the established guidelines.
The key premise of the GKN is being a network whereby you are empowered to ask for help from your neighbours. We aim to keep them hyper-local, so there's no FYI business promo or offer of help post. The premise is that neighbours feel confident to ask for help and post their requests. It's the reverse of many local Facebook groups where there's a lot of witching and moaning. Positivity is our goal. Where they were started in Kensington by Amy Churchhouse, and now there are nearly 40 networks and 120,000 plus members across three states.
Oh, thank you for letting us know that, Shelley. Like, there are these many different spaces and places, but that's what the Good Karma Network is specifically, that exists. You know what? We've gotten so many messages in today. We've been having so many great and exciting chats, and we've gotten so many messages in that we haven't really gotten a chance to get to them. Quite a few have come in about the chat that we have with Ando talking about endings, and we had a quick chat with Ando after the show and have decided we didn't want to wait another month for that conversation to end or come back. So we're going to do it next week.
Yeah, we're going to have endings 2.0 with Ando because you just can't end the endings.
No, it never ends for us. And you know what? It's not over yet. It's 8 minutes to nine, and this is The Worst Person Alive by G Flip. I love this song so much.
So good. Hey, I'm Rach.
And I'm Dean, and I hope you enjoyed this little snippet of the fun we bring to air as a part of Joy Breakfast during weekdays.
Don't forget to tune in from 7 till 9 a.m. or like and subscribe to the Joy Podcast.
And keep yourself out loud and proud.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.